The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning. Good morning. The first time that I heard The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll was on an album by Judy Collins that I had bought when I was in college. Those times in the 1960s when Bob Dylan wrote that song saw the death, the assassinations of Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King. And for many of us, they were a time for tears. Good morning, and welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We're located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, but this morning, thanks to the magic of the internet and Zoom and our wonderful tech team in the back, we are also as close as your home. We're a Unitarian Universalist congregation dedicated to nurturing the spirit and transforming the world. I'm Preston Lutwiler, President of the Board of Trustees, and I want to personally welcome you this morning. Wherever you are on your life journey, wherever you are on your spiritual journey, whomever you love, whatever your gender identity or expression, we welcome you into our ever-expanding circle of compassion and caring. Our Soul Matters theme for January is Finding Our Center. Our sermon today by Reverend Aidson Wright Riggins III is about being maladjusted to madness, a phrase from a sermon given by Reverend Martin Luther King in 1954 and echoed in the words from a sermon that he gave also in 1966 that were included in the heading of the Order of Service. We all want to live a well-adjusted life in order to avoid the neurotic and schizophrenic personalities. But I must honestly say there are some things in our nation and the world to which I am proud to be maladjusted and wish all men of goodwill and women of goodwill would be maladjusted until the good society is realized. I will light the chalice with words from Let the Center Hold by Reverend Joe Cherry. This is my prayer. Please let the center hold. The center is what holds our faith together. The strength of the center is what allows us to stretch farther into the future, to the unknown, the untried, the uncertain, the unnerving, the places where growth happens. Let the center be strong, and let the center of this living tradition move with the times. Let the center of our living tradition lead the times. May the strength of the center strengthen us as we seek, as we embody compassion, work for equity, demand justice for all. Let our center hold, strong as an old oak tree, flexible as the willow tree, life-giving as an orange tree, evergreen as the pine tree, and as beautiful as the almond trees in blossom. Now, as I light the peace lamp, repeat with the words that are on the screen after me, may peace be with you and with all the people of the world. Our gathering song today will be hymn number 121, We'll Build a Land, performed by Mo Mack and John and Cynthia Bowling. The music is by Carolyn McDade and the original lyrics were by Barbara Zanotti. But Mo Mack added a verse and changed a few words, and I really like this version. So the words will appear on your screen. Feel free to stand as you're willing and able and sing along.
Mm-hmm. justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream.
We'll build a land where we bring the good tidings to all the afflicted and all those who mourn, and we'll give them garlands instead of ashes. We'll build a land where peace is born.
Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace. Where justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream.
We'll build a land where the forests are fertile, where the water and wind run clean and clear, and community matters more than possessions. Come share this land, let's build it right here.
Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace. Where justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream.
One more time.
Oh, come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace.
For justice shall roll,
justice shall roll like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream.
And peace like an ever-flowing stream.
Today's story, very fittingly, is Martin's big words. And before we get started, I want to just say the reason I need to use a mic is so the people on Zoom can hear it. I know you can hear me without the mic, but they can't. So boys and girls, before we get started, I want to tell you about something I did when I was your age that was not a good thing, okay? When I was your age and I first started going to school, they didn't have kindergarten, so it was first grade. And we were very poor and I didn't have any toys. And somebody brought in a Barbie doll, and it made its way into my desk. Now, you know, that was not the right thing to do. And the teacher asked, did anyone see the missing Barbie doll? And I confessed that I had it. And that was wrong. But here's what I want to say to you. When you do things that are not good or that you know you shouldn't have done, there's nothing wrong with saying you did it and saying you're sorry and not doing it again. So today's story is part of the story of our country, because not only do people sometimes do things that are wrong, sometimes our country does things that aren't good. And then as a country, we've got to recognize that and move forward. And so today's story is called Martin's Big Words. So here we go. You can help with the pages. Thank you. Okay, am I on the right spot? Good. Everywhere in Martin's hometown, he saw the signs, white only. His mother said these signs were in all southern cities and towns in the United States. Every time Martin read the words, he felt bad until he remembered what his mother told him. And by the way, boys and girls, all those words you see that are in brown letters, those are actually the words that Martin Luther King Jr. said. She, or his mother said. These are actual words. She told him, you are as good as anyone. In church, Martin sang hymns. He read from the Bible. He listened to his father preach. These words made him feel good. When I grow up, I'm going to get big words too. Martin grew up, he became a minister like his father, and he used the big words he had heard as a child from his parents and from the Bible. Everyone can be great. He said together when others said separate. He said peace when did I miss a page? Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. He studied the teachings of Mahatma Gandhi. He learned how the Indian nation won freedom without ever firing a gun. Martin said love when others said hate. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. He said together when others said separate. He said peace when others said war. Sooner or later, all the people of the world will have to discover a way to live together. In 1955, on a cold December day in Montgomery, Alabama, Rosa Parks was coming home from work. A white man told her to get up from her seat on the bus so he could sit. She said no and was arrested. Montgomery's black citizens learned of her arrest and it made them angry. They decided not to ride the buses until they could sit anywhere they wanted. For 381 days, they walked just to work and school and church. They walked in rain and cold and in blistering heat. By the way, I'm a little emotional about this because I remember that. Martin walked with them and talked with them and sang with them and prayed with them until the white city leaders had to agree they could sit anywhere they wanted. When the history books are written, someone will say there lived black people who had the courage to stand up for their rights. In the next 10 years, black Americans all over the South protested for equal rights. Martin walked with them and talked with them and sang with them and prayed with them. White ministers told them to stop. Mayors and governors and police chiefs and judges ordered them to stop, but they kept marching. Here's the words of Martin. Wait, for years I have heard the word wait, and we have waited more than 340 years for our rights. They were jailed and beaten and murdered, but they kept on marching. Some black Americans wanted to fight back with their fists. Martin convinced them not to by reminding them of the power of love. Love is the key to the problems of all the world, of the world. Many white Southerners hated and feared Martin's words. A few threatened to kill him and his family. His house was bombed, his brother's house was bombed, but he refused to stop. Remember, if I am stopped, this movement will not stop, be stopped, because God is with this movement. The marches continued. More and more Americans listened to Martin's words. He shared his dreams and filled them with hope. I have a dream that one day in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will join hands with little white girls and white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. After 10 years of protests, the lawmakers in Washington voted to end segregation. The white-only signs in the South came down. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. cared about all Americans. He cared about people all over the world, and people all over the world admired him. In 1964, he won the Nobel Peace Prize. He won it because he taught others to fight with words, not fists. Martin went wherever people needed help. In April 1968, he went to Memphis, Tennessee. He went to help garbage collectors who were on strike. He walked with them and talked with them and sang with them and prayed with them. On his second day there, he was shot. He died. His big words are alive for us today. Freedom, peace, together, I have a dream, and love. And that's our story for today. Thank you to all my good helpers. I appreciate that. Which was a good beginning. Now, do you want to take the basket back to the... Go now in peace, go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go. Do you want...
Reverend Aidson Wright Riggins III has given sermons at our fellowship before. He's an inspiring preacher. Most of you know that. He's also the mayor of Collegeville and a personal friend who I know is Ace. Among his many accomplishments through his life, he served as director of Peace and Justice Ministries for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference of Greater Los Angeles. We are truly honored to have Reverend Ace in our pulpit today.
Thank you, Preston, and good morning, Thomas Paine. I'm excited to be with you, but in addition to being excited, I'm also a little bit nervous. I'm nervous because I was not fully able to expunge the Black Baptist preacher in me this week as I wrote this missive, so we may be just a little bit longer than you're accustomed to. But I warn you that since I wrote it, you're going to hear it. I've been ruminating on the text from Paul's letter to the Romans in that chapter, the 12th chapter, and the second verse. We read these words: "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect." Now, I confess that there are days when I feel like Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. Do you remember his song, The Message, in which they shared their experience about America's ethical madness a generation ago? They said, "It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Don't push me, 'cause I'm close to the edge, and I'm trying not to lose my head." I sense a profound restlessness and anxiousness, a spirit that permeates the souls of millions of Americans these days. There is a sense that sense itself is unraveling before our very eyes. Decency is being deconstructed. Discord appears to be dismantling our democracy, moving us closer and closer to despotism and fascism. Some warn of a civil war, and some argue that we have been in a civil war for over 150 years or so. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how we keep from going under. While Eric Garner said, "I can't breathe," taking his last breath, cities were choking on contaminated air, once pristine, but now polluted by rapacious policies that favor giant multinational corporations rather than all the citizens of planet Earth. It's like a jungle sometimes. The blood of our children and our neighbors spilled from classrooms and churches and synagogues. Sometimes we've seen it in shopping malls as demagogues shout the supremacy of whiteness. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Oh my God, it feels like deja vu all over again. Anti-civil and anti-human rights have taken a page out of Facebook's flashback throwback Thursday. Today it feels like setback century, as voting rights gained in the 1960s are eroded and there is a brazen national disregard for the price that Martin and Malcolm and Cheney and Goodman and Schwerner paid for our franchise, at least 145 states are now passing legislation aimed at voter suppression. Yeah, it's like a jungle sometimes. Did I say women? Their lives are being turned into handmaiden tales as their reproductive freedoms are being repudiated by 21st century commanders. The bodily autonomy of women is under relentless assault. Where is she who cannot exclaim, "Me too"? Men better watch out. Don't push her because she's close to the edge. You might wake up in the middle of the night with hot grits being poured down your ear. Isn't it strange, too, that in a multicultural democracy, which claims freedom of religion and freedom from religion, that religion itself is now being used to shape public policies, taking aim at denying whom has the right to love whom, while simultaneously propping up patriarchal hegemony? Alton Pollard, the president of Louisville Presbyterian Seminary, laments all of these intersectional oppressions. To this list, he adds unjust sentencing laws, environmental degradation, healthcare inequity, educational disparity, workplace inequality, violated freedoms, forms of stigma, and all manner of bigotry. Yeah, don't push me, because I'm close to the edge. Try not to lose my head. How do we address this moral and societal madness without being driven mad in the process? How might we remain maladjusted to madness? Taking this text from Romans 12 and 2, Martin Luther King addressed this in part at first on November 1954 in his sermon at Dexter Avenue Church. King was on a mission to kill Jim Crow. Jim Crow was that racial and segregational discrimination against African Americans enforced by laws and customs and practices, and especially the southern part of the United States, from the end of construction in 1877 into the mid 20th century. And in some ways, his sermon served as a kind of a mission statement for the movement that he was to launch for the next several years, beginning with the Montgomery bus boycott. But King took his clue from Paul. In his letter to the Romans, Paul had addressed an intercultural, interfaith community of people who lived in the Roman Empire, whose loyalty was to an empire that was not made with hands. While Rome was priding itself as the capital of justice, the source through which justice would flow throughout the world, exiled Jews and Christian Jews and newly minted Gentile Christians experienced Roman justice quite differently. And Paul declared that the gospel of King Jesus reveals God's justice as a deliberate challenge to Caesar's imperial pretensions. Paul tells his reader, and Martin preaches to his hearers, that they are mandated to be nonconformist. If the new world is to be birthed, our minds and our feet can no longer move to the rhythmic drumbeat of the status quo. In King's sermon, he expounds over and over again that people are called to be people of conviction, not conformity, people of moral nobility, not social respectability. We are commanded to live differently and according to a higher loyalty. In that November 1954 sermon, King critiques how America and its people of faith move from rugged extreme individualism to an even greater extreme rugged collectivism, adopting a mass mind and an addiction to the status quo. Why, he asks, are we not makers of history rather than simply being made by history? Now, King was an equal opportunity critic. Although he was a Baptist preacher and a Christian, he derides the church and people of faith. He says that there is far too much silence behind stained glass windows. King says, called to be the moral guardian of the community, the church at times has preserved that which is immoral and unethical. Called to combat social evils, it remains silent. Called to lead people on the highway of brotherhood and sisterhood and to summon them to rise above narrow confines of race and class, it has enunciated and practiced racial exclusiveness. King says that we're called to be thermostats and not thermometers. But this morning I'm moved to focus on the second half of that verse. I'm certain that most of us are convinced, if not fully committed, that we should be serious about the first six words of that verse, be not conformed to this world. And I believe I'm right when I say that the Thomas Paine Fellowship was founded on a commitment to justice, equity, compassion, and human relations, and to the goal of a world community with peace and liberty and justice for all. We don't need to preach to the choir here. But that second half of the verse, be transformed by the renewing of your minds. In the words of Claude McKay, how do we live while round about us bark mad and hungry dogs, making their mock of our accursed lot? How do we become adjusted? How do we not become adjusted to America's empire's latest false mantra that there is a middle ground on the playing field of insanity? One of my friends and a Facebook friend as well posted poignant words by Rebecca Solnit recently. Speaking of refusing to become adjusted to madness, she declares to all of us that we are mad if we fall for the lie that there is a middle ground between Nazis and anti-racists. We are mad if we believe that there is a reasonable position between rapists and feminists. We are mad if we believe that there is a middle ground between slaveholders and abolitionists, between natives and General Crook. How might we be transformed by the renewing of our minds? How do we situate ourselves so as not to be maladjusted to madness? Well, I'm glad you asked. Now, I'm no expert here, because I spend a whole lot of my conscious time rocking on the ragged precipice, fearful that I might fall headlong into the dark dungeon of despair. But on my better days, I've experienced some hope and some light. So in the remaining minutes that I have with you, let me explore with you some sources of renewal for our minds in maddening times like this. First of all, I want to suggest to you that we might want to resist going mad in times like this by considering risking one eye. Consider risking one eye. What do I mean by this? When I was about 10 years old, on the verge of manhood, my Uncle Sonny told me a joke attempting to introduce me to my first sexual education lesson. Uncle Sonny said that there was a boy in high school who accidentally walked into the girls' locker room at just in time, just right before these teenage girls were changing from their school clothes to their gym shorts. The female teacher spotted him just as he walked in and quickly shouted, "Stop! Stop! Close your eyes or you'll go blind." Immediately, the boy closed his eyes, put his hands over his eyes, and he began to squint. And then he began to peep, and he said, "This might be worth risking one eye. This might be worth risking one eye. Well, and I know that the metaphor doesn't completely work here, but the point needs to be made that as people of faith, we cannot keep our eyes completely closed to the world that's going on around us. I confess that I no longer get up at 5:30 in the morning and the first thing I do is turn on cable news. I don't do that anymore. I don't want to ruin my whole day that early in the day. I've grown exhausted by hearing asinine comments reported regarding immigrants and refugees. I'm ashamed that as I take my vitamins and head off to the gym, and I'm then being reminded that just one zip code away, there are my neighbors who don't have access to medicine for their bodies or education for their minds or dignity for their human spirit. I confess that there are some sections of Montgomery County that I often avoid driving through or walking through because I'm sick and tired of seeing sick and tired people who languish on inner city and rural streets. I confess that I oftentimes enjoy and find myself binge watching the Hallmark Channel rather than wondering why are there so many people nowadays in the food pantry line. I confess that I don't like to think about Phoenix, our correctional institution just right next door, that has as many people there as Collegeville has in its borough. It makes me wonder sometimes, how do we keep from going under? I'm trying not to lose my head. To this, Uncle Sonny says, risk one eye. Martin preaches nonconformity. Paul proclaims, be transformed. Unless we take a serious look at the world's suffering and oppression, not only will those who need us suffer, but we ourselves will atrophy and die. Yes, we may go blind if we stare too intently into the searing sun of suffering. For more than one biblical and contemporary prophet has hovered between sainthood and insanity by doing so. But if we refuse to look, we will suffer a different kind of madness, a madness that communicates a sickening silence while the world needs a bold witnessing word. Our silence sometimes empowers empire and condemns the victims. Our silence sucks the life out of our own souls. But there's more to this text. Be transformed by the renewing of your minds, of your minds. The mind is the key category in Paul's vision of renewal. Tending to the mind in this oppressive and exhausting situations can keep us from going mad. Here we are at the beginning of a new year. And at the top of many of our resolution lists are renewal ideas about our bodies. Many of us are concerned about losing weight, gaining strength, improving our cardiovascular systems, and all of that's good. For others of us, we're focused on renewal of our attitudes. We're determined to have an attitude of graciousness and cheerfulness and optimism, and all of that's terrific. But here Paul talks about the renewal of the mind. Why the mind? Recently, I've been rereading Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. You remember Viktor Frankl? He was that Holocaust survivor and psychologist who founded a branch of psychology known as logotherapy. And in his studies and in his thought, he thought seriously about survival. And he often described what it took to survive. He said oftentimes, he or she who has a reason why to live can bear just about any how. Frankl survived hellish conditions in Nazi German concentration camps. It was horrendous what he and other concentration camp survivors went through. In his book, he observes and reports on how important life and health of the mind can be. He observed a paradox in the concentration camps. He noted that it was often the prisoners of a less hardy physical makeup who survived the concentration camp, when those of a less robust physical nature succumbed. It was not always about the survival of the physically fittest. Franco noted that those who had depth in their spiritual and intellectual life, even though they suffered as much physical and psychic pain as did others, had less damage to their inner core. They were able to tap into the riches of their past spiritual and intellectual lives and thereby transpose their terrible surroundings into an inner freedom. My football coach used to say, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. But Viktor Frankl says that when camp survivors were up to their ankles in human feces, when they were beaten relentlessly by their guards, when they witnessed their loved ones being taken off to ovens and incinerators, what kept the strongest among them sane and going forward was not brute strength or unbridled optimism. It was the ability to sing songs they thought they had forgotten, recall sacred texts they had memorized, recite poems they had learned in school, recite paragraphs from books that they had long since been burned, but were yet etched upon the tablets of their minds and on their hearts. Yes, it's been said, if you don't lose it, you lose it. But I believe it equally true that if you never had it, woe is you. My brothers and sisters, may I ask you, what are you reading? What are you listening to? Who has challenged you? In the time of testing, what do you draw on so that you are not driven mad? How deep is the well of your spiritual and intellectual resources to draw on so that you are not squeezed into the world's mold? Finally, let me say this. I think that it's important that we look at the last stanza of that second verse. Paul says, do not be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewing of the mind, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. The renewal of our minds, a renewal that both keeps us from going mad and empowers us to address the world's madness, is inevitably linked to our discernment and commitment to God's good, an acceptable and perfect future. Allow me to repeat that. The renewal of our minds, a renewal that both keeps us from going mad and empowers us to address the world's madness, is inevitably linked to our discernment and commitment to God's good and acceptable and perfect future. This has an A and B component. First, if we're going to escape despair that seeks to destroy us, if we are to keep our wits while living in a culture that continually seeks to feed us lies, if we're going to be strong enough to rebel and to resist, we've got to be crazy enough to believe that God is and God does have a future for us, that it is good, that is acceptable, that is perfect for all of God's creation. Elie Wiesel, another Holocaust survivor, tells the story this way in Ariel Berger's book, Witness. Listen to this passage by Wiesel. Tells the story. One day, a man came to the city. He began to preach to its inhabitants, telling them to change their evil ways. He wanted to save them from destruction, a destruction he knew that would result if their sin, if they did not stop sinning against one another. Please, he said, stop your cruelty. Please stop your inhumanity. You must be kinder to the stranger, to the children of the stranger. And he went on like this for many days, but no one listened. He did not give up. He continued preaching and protesting for many years, and finally a passerby asked him, Rabbi, really? Why do you do that? Don't you see that no one's listening? He answered, I know. No one will listen, but I cannot stop. You see, first I thought that I had to preach and protest in order to change them. But now, although I continue to speak, it is not to change the world. It is so that they do not change me. The corollary component is also familiar. We keep from going mad by keeping our eyes on the prize. The world cannot squeeze us into the world's mold when we hold fast to the vision. Perhaps we free ourselves from the madness of the world by nurturing a belief in the goodness of God and God's ultimate aim for the cosmos, and the aim that it is worth dedicating one's life and one's energies for. On this Martin Luther King Jr. Sunday, let us remember and recall some of the last public words that King himself made. The night before King's assassination in Memphis was one of the most depressing nights of his life. 90% of America was against him because of his position on the Vietnam War. Only a handful of black churches and preachers were behind him because many thought that he had gone too far and was demanding too much. Those of us in the black consciousness movement felt that he was not radical enough. He was tired and he was worn. Some might say that he was on the brink of mental and spiritual madness. But King had a deep well to draw from. Do you remember the last words he said publicly on April 3rd, 1968, the Charles Mason Temple? He spoke about a life and a history that with blood and tears had been watered. And then he concluded with these words, and then I got to Memphis. And some began to talk about the threats that were out there. What would happen to me from some of our sick white brothers? Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead, but it doesn't matter to me now because I've been to the mountaintop. And I don't mind. Like anybody, I'd like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. God's allowed me to go up the mountain, and I've looked over, he said, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. And I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. King was maladjusted to madness. My brothers and sisters, I pray that we remain maladjusted to madness. I pray that we are willing to risk losing at least one eye. I pray that we identify with human suffering. I pray that we would have the courage and conviction to speak our truth even when the world refuses to listen. And I pray that you and I are sustained by the conviction that history itself is in the hands of a purposive God, and nothing can thwart God's purposes for us. The movement had a song. Remember that? Keep your eye on the prize. Hold on. Hold on. Freedom's name is mighty sweet, and we're all one day gonna meet. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on. The only thing that I've done wrong was staying in the wilderness too long. Keep your eye on the prize. Hold on, hold on. The very thing that we did right was the day we started to fight. Fight, fight. Keep your eye on the prize. hold on. God bless you.
To let that sink in a little bit. We've come to the time in our service we call Matters of the Heart, where we hear from those of you who may wish to speak. We're going to hear a brief meditation from Isaac Strader, and then Mike McNeil will guide those who want to speak in how to participate.
Spirit of life, come unto me, sing in my heart all the stirrings of compassion, blow in the wind, rise in the sea.
I'm going to lay down my burden, down by the riverside, down by that river, down by that riverside, going to lay down my burden. Down by that riverside, study war no more. I ain't gonna study war no more, study war no more, study war no more, no more. I ain't gonna study war no more. Study war no more, study war no more. Lay down my sword and shield,
down by the riverside,
down by the riverside,
down, down by the riverside.
Don't lay down my sword and shield,
down by the riverside.
Study war no more,
study war no more,
no more.
I
One of my favorite quotes from our namesake, Thomas Paine, is, "We have it in our power to make the world over again." And I'll close with words paraphrased from Reverend Scott Taylor, "Our Daring of Intention." May we dare to live from the center of our being. May we make our own choices before others' choices make us. May the fire that burns in us light our way. May our collective intention shine out and make the world over again. With the knowledge that it is okay, even noble, to be maladjusted to madness, we extinguish this chalice, but not the light of hope and the fire of commitment that we will carry into the world.